third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here live at Bridgestone Arena. Chase is off today and tomorrow. He'll be back with us on Monday. We're getting a little bit closer to another inter-squad scrimmage as we are live here at Bridgestone Arena between the white team and the gold team here for the Predators. Yesterday, the gold team prevailed 4-1. The scrimmage looks like we've got the same officials.
Same teams, same roster,
Scotty
same
Nickel,
officials. Yep.
David Good. As the officials out there, as they're getting a little bit closer. They'll be off tomorrow, Saturday, another practice, and then they will head to the hub city of Edmonton on Sunday, and they will get ready for a July 30th scrimmage exhibition game against the Dallas Stars, and then it is on Sunday, August 2nd. Game one, they will kick off that whole day's worth of action, as it'll be the Predators and the Coyotes in game one of the qualifying round. And with all that being said, let's bring in a guy who knows a little bit, a thing or two, about the opponent for the Predators. Craig Morgan is on the line with us, and he, azcoyotesinsider.com is where you can find his work. Craig, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you guys?
We can't complain. We're sitting here at Bridgestone Arena ready to see the Predators get after it here in this training camp. I guess we're calling it a July training camp. How have things been out in the desert? How have things gone for the Coyotes to this point?
Well, I don't take a lot away from training camp practice. I just don't think there are a lot of definitive takeaways available there. But they've shown a lot of energy. I think that part is important. They've been playing with pace, which is a critical component of Rick Tocchet's style. And of course, the thing that a lot of teams can say right now is they're completely healthy. So that, in my mind, is just one of many variables that normally doesn't exist in a postseason and makes this particular postseason really difficult to handicap.
Yeah, no doubt about it. When do they leave for Edmonton?
They go up Sunday.
They go up Sunday as well. So, Craig, we have no idea how this is going to play out, right? And so I just want to get your opinion of – We're not used to five-game series. I mean, they're always seven games. These qualifying rounds are going to be a shorter series. So how do you think, in your opinion or in your mind, game one is going to be viewed? Because obviously there's less games. It counts. Game one, I don't ever want to say, is not important. I think game one is always important of a series. But doesn't it become ramped up a little bit more, the importance of game one in a shorter series?
No question. I think it's a massive advantage to win that game. Of course, it doesn't decide the series, but it gives you such a leg up in a short series, and the coaches have admitted that as well. You really have to be ready right from the get-go, because if you can get a jump on a team, they're going to be chasing you the whole time. But again, who knows what we're going to see, because you look at all the key components of both of these teams. Are they actually going to be sharp going into game one, or are we going to see some sloppy play early in the postseason until teams find their legs and their structure?
You know, it's October, November seems like a long, long time ago. And it's hard to really go off a couple of meetings between these two teams back a long, long time ago. So I don't think we can take anything away from that as we sit here in late July. And they'll start in early August. There's one guy I want to know a little bit more about, Connor Garland, who kind of burst on the scene. He led the team in goals with 22, only player on the Coyotes. Philip Forsberg is the only player for the Predators with 20 or more goals. Well, tell us a little bit more about him, and how did this season play out for him where, like I said, he got everybody's attention by scoring a lot of goals for the Coyotes?
Yeah, he's a great story, because he's a fifth-round draft pick from back in 2015 who really had to remake his game completely. He was more of a guy who liked to play with the puck, stay on the perimeter and create. And the coaching staff, the development staff of the Coyotes said, look, to be honest, you're not that guy. You're not going to be the guy that we have with a puck in his hands all the time carrying through the center of the ice. You've got to be a guy that's more of a darter who goes to the net, who gets in the corners. And, of course, Connor Garland's only about 5'8", so that's a lot to ask. But to his credit, he really worked on that down in Tucson of the AHL, did really remake his game. And when it came up late last season due to a bunch of injuries, he had some success late last season scoring a bunch of goals, and they were all around the net. One, in fact, went off his face and left a big cut on him. But as Rick Tocchet says, you go to the net, you often get rewarded. Well, he brought that same style of play into this season and led the team with 22 goals, which is not a great total for a team that absolutely needs to score more, but Connor Garland is one of the most fun players to watch in the NHL, and I had a bunch of scouts tell me that. You know, they weren't that aware of him, but when they'd come through the press box, you know, after games, they'd just say how much fun he was to watch because he never stops moving. He's always darting in the corners. He's really hard to get a lick on. And again, he is fearless. He goes to the net, and he's scoring a lot of goals for them. I don't see much of that changing in the postseason. He knows what his style has to be. He could be a guy who could make a real impact on this series.
Craig, beware. They're going to play the national anthem, I think, in a minute here. So forgive us as we talk over it. But I've heard Connor Garland recently in an interview talk about how Steve Sullivan, a guy you know with a similar build, similar makeup, who works with the Coyotes, was a great influence on Connor Garland. Is that fair to say?
It's absolutely true. I wrote a story last year on how he remade his game, and Steve Sullivan, of course, was a critical source in that because he is both the Coyotes' assistant general manager. He's the general manager of Tucson, and he is the guy that really oversees their development process. And he had a lot of long conversations with Connor about just that. Yeah, they have similar games. They have similar statures. So they had a lot of talks about what he needed to do to make it to the NHL. So it is definitely fair to say that Steve Sullivan had a major influence on Connor Garland.
Craig, how much are they relying on a guy like Phil Kessel, who didn't have the regular season he was looking for, but a guy that has logged so many critical minutes in big games in the playoffs? Certainly he is used to postseason play and Stanley Cup playoff play. I know there's no way for any of us to know how he's going to come out playing after this long pause, but how much are the Coyotes relying on him to use that experience in this postseason?
They're definitely relying on him. He's been an incredible playoff performer over the course of his career. Of course, he played with some really good players, particularly in Pittsburgh, where he won a couple cups. But Phil had a very disappointing season. Part of that was due to injuries. He talked about this on a recent Zoom call, how it was probably the most injury-plagued season he's ever had. I reported way back early in the season that he had a groin injury that probably impacted him for about a quarter of the season. Phil Kessel needs his speed. He needs his breakaway speed to be effective, and he just didn't have that for a good chunk. But even when he came out of that, we were just seeing things that didn't happen earlier in his career. He wasn't shooting as much. He was missing the net often. He was making bad passes, and he's a terrific passer. So a lot of mistakes that were coming from him, a lot of that on the power play, too, where they really wanted him to have an impact. He never seemed to mesh with Oliver Ekman-Larsson and even Taylor Hall when he came over. So I do think Phil is looking at this as sort of a second chance, a fresh start for him to try and make amends for the season he had. Health will help a lot, but hopefully Phil was also training hard over these 4 months off, because as his body ages, I think, you know, the Phil Kessel of old that, you know, always did what he needed to do but didn't do the extra stuff, I think that has to go by the wayside if he wants to extend his career.
Opening faceoff just happened. Nick Bonino and Matt Duchene. Gold team wins the faceoff, and away we go. A little inter-squad scrimmage here, and we're underway here at Bridgestone Arena. They did not end, obviously. When they hit the pause button, everybody in the league hit the pause button. When the Coyotes did that, they were not in places they were earlier in the year where they were leading the division. They were on the outside looking in. What happened late in the year going into the pause where it seemed like Arizona was going the wrong direction, Craig?
Well, they brought in Taylor Hall, and I think everybody thought from that point they might take off because they were hovering around. They were in first place, actually. But one game into Taylor Hall's tenure, Darcy Kuemper got hurt. Their number one goalie, their Vezina Trophy candidate, played at a spectacular level. I heard writers mentioning him in the Hart Trophy conversation earlier in the season. But he missed a good chunk of games, and you saw, at least for those first 2 months that he was out, the Coyotes got below-average goaltending, and it really hurt this team because this team is built from the back end out. They really rely on that defensive identity, and you know, when you're maybe not scoring quite as much as you need to, it gets magnified. They really struggled. I think they won 6 times in 17 outings, fell all the way out of the traditional playoff race, so that was the biggest factor. They seemed to right the ship, actually, about the last 10 games before the pause, even though they were about a 500 team. They were playing much better. They were actually at the top of the league and generating chances. So they felt like they still had a chance to climb in because they had a bunch of home games. But, yeah, getting back to your earlier question, I really think losing Darcy Kuemper was the big blow for this club.
We're talking to Craig Morgan. He covers the Coyotes for AZ Coyotes Insider. Coyotes Insider. And he knows this team backwards and forwards. We're watching the Predators in the inter-squad scrimmage right now. So, Craig, you mentioned Taylor Hall, and it's a really interesting thing that is unfolding with him because he's free agent coming up. I know the Coyotes, as I've read before, they would like to keep him there for sure. The market is now a little uncertain, even though now there is certainty in the collective bargaining agreement. So where does all that stand right now, his future with the team?
Well, as you guys probably saw, there are multiple reports, I was one of them, that there was a meeting between Hall, the new president, Javier Gutierrez, and also the owner, Alex Morello, and his son, recently in Arizona. I believe that an offer was crafted for Taylor Hall, and it sounds like it was a little below where most people believe Taylor Hall's market value is. So it's interesting on a number of fronts. General Manager John Chyka was not there, which is odd in a way. We could talk about that if you want, but I think the bigger picture is, you know, right now, Taylor Hall has always said he's open to returning here. His agent, Darren Ferris, has always told me he's open to returning here, and John Chyka has made it clear that they want to re-sign him, but the Coyotes are in a bit of a cap crunch, so they'll have to make some moves, and you know, I wonder in this flat cap era, how many teams actually will have the wherewithal to sign a guy like Hall at the price he wants. The flat cap has changed things dramatically. I don't really have a full sense of what the market is going to look like for UFAs, but there's no question it's going to be impacted. And I think a lot of GMs have to think long and hard about committing long-term and at this price for a guy like Taylor Hall when you're going to be facing this economic crunch. So terrible time probably for Taylor Hall to become a UFA.
Do you think there's any way this plays a factor in how they come out of this return to play and play? Let's say they get ousted by the Predators, or let's play the other side. They make kind of a deep run into the Stanley Cup playoffs. Do you think that would affect what his future may be in Arizona?
I absolutely think it impacts it. Taylor Hall wants to be someplace where he feels a team can win. He wants to be in the playoffs. So if the Coyotes bow out in the play-in round, which is, I suppose, technically not the postseason, that can't help their chances. On the flip side, if they do make a run, win a series or two, that could certainly help their chances, as could maybe, you know, the flat cap if the Coyotes can make their own moves to fit him in. But he definitely wants to be in the postseason. He's only tasted it once in his entire career, amazing as that sounds. He wants to get back there, and he wants to be a part of a team that he thinks has a future.
One theme that I think every team has, Craig, there's going to be a few guys on the team that were playing through stuff all season long. They probably weren't themselves, and now you have this restart button. The Predators roster is full of them. Who would that be for your team? I know you've written on Oliver Ekman-Larsson, a guy that is a tremendous player. Offensively, what does the restart do for a guy like him, or is there anybody else that comes to mind when I throw that out there?
Yeah, Oliver's definitely one of them. He had off-season knee surgery and told me in a story the other day that it just never felt right the whole season. This 4 months off really helped him. He feels 100%. So he's definitely one to look at. I mentioned Kessel earlier with the groin. He finally feels healthy. But there are some other players. I think you have to look at both of the goalies. You know, while they were both playing at the end, I think they were probably playing through some stuff, so they're probably both fresh now. Jacob Chychrun had a muscle strain. It was a psoas muscle strain that had him out of the lineup. And then Connor Garland, who we talked about earlier, he had an MCL sprain that was going to keep him out for the rest of at least the regular season. So he's 100%. Now, a lot of guys on the Coyotes were impacted by injuries that are able to play now. And actually, I left one out. Brad Richardson had double core surgery 2 days after the season ended, and he's all good now. So a lot of guys were impacted by this.
All right, Craig, we have to ask the question that is booming around the NHL circles right now. Your initial thought, your first impression on the Seattle Kraken logo and nickname?
You know what? I think professional sports teams are too boring, too conservative with their nicknames most of the time. So I applaud Seattle for actually listening to the masses and getting a little creative with this name. Now, there may be some people that think it's not enough of a grown-up name, but, you know, it's fun. I think a lot of people will enjoy it, and I absolutely love the logo and color scheme. So I applaud them.
Well, what is this team? It's going to be interesting when the Coyotes, after Seattle gets into the league, the Coyotes will be in the Predators division in the Central. How crazy is that going to be?
Well, the Coyotes aren't happy about it, I can tell you that. You know,
I wouldn't be either.
Talked to people with Yeah, the travel is they already face one of the worst schedules in the league on an annual basis because of travel, and that'll make it even worse. I know they're not happy about it. I know they plan to revisit this with the NHL and hope that the NHL might take a more creative approach with realignment rather than taking the easiest possible solution and just shoving the Coyotes in the Central. I think they could go to a better model like the NFL. You could have 8 four-team divisions at this point now that you've got 32 teams. And I've actually written this story. There are ways to figure that out pretty easily. I hope that they get a little more creative with this because putting the Coyotes in the Central is it's a bad decision.
Greg, we're looking forward to this. Can't wait. August 2nd can get here fast enough. It's going to be a lot of fun to see how all this plays out. Thank you so much for your time, and we'll certainly be talking to you soon. Thanks for doing this.
All right, guys. Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, that is Craig Morgan. He is a Coyotes insider. azcoyotesinsider.com is where you can find his work on the team. That, of course, is the opponent in the qualifying round for the Predators, and they will get the action started on Sunday, August 2nd in that game. Was it a 1 o'clock our time start? Is that right? I don't have it in front of me. 1 o'clock?
Game one?
Yep. 1 o'clock
I will tell
our
you
time.
In just a moment.
Which, by the way,
if I could get the website to go,
can watch on Fox Sports Tennessee and listen right here on 102.5 The Game. Pete Weber and Hal Gill will have the call. I'll have pregame for you. I believe it's 1, so I'm going to go with noon. That's my final answer. I don't have it in front of me as Willie is checking.
Scrambling. It is a 1 o'clock.
Okay.
Yes, it is a 1 o'clock.
So noon pregame right here on 102.5 The Game, and that'll be the first of 5 games that day in the National Hockey League. There'll be a couple round-robin games as well. Saturday, August 1st, we'll have 5 games, no round-robin, all qualify round games, and so that'll be interesting as hockey has their return to play on Saturday, August 1st. We'll come back. More action here from Bridgestone Arena. White versus gold. They're 7 minutes into this inter-squad scrimmage. No score here from Bridgestone Arena. More coming on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Don't forget you can stream us anywhere in the world. Yeah. Or you can do that at the beach, wherever you are. All you have to do is download the Game Nashville app. That's free and easy to do. Also, if you've got Alexa skill or Google Home and rooms in your house like we have at our house or at your office place, all you have to do is ask it to play 102.5 The Game. Or you can always live stream it from our website, which is thegamenashville.com. All easy, easy options.
Scott Nickel just got booed on an icing call. He had a little indecision on whether he was going to call it or not. UC Saros then came scrambling out of the net to play the puck, and then he blew the whistle. So he drew the ire of the crew. Also, Nick Barnowski got booed big time as part of the ice crew for his scooping ability of the snow during the TV timeout. Still no score in the game, though.
Still no score midway through. The first inter-squad scrimmage here. Seattle Kraken, if you haven't heard, is indeed the nickname of the 32nd team in the National Hockey League. They will start up their inaugural season in the 2021-22 season. And they're probably glad they didn't start in 2019-2020, right, with the year that it's been. That would have been a crazy way to start off a brand-new franchise. But congratulations to them. A lot of people are wondering what their nickname would be. Craig Morgan is who we just talked to, who covers the Arizona Coyotes. That'll be the qualifying round series for the Predators, them and the Arizona Coyotes. And I think it's a really intriguing matchup, a real intriguing matchup. And we'll talk to Elliot Friedman at 1 o'clock because I think both teams are equipped with two goaltenders that they can absolutely count on. And, you know, if they need one or the other, or both, which probably both teams will need both, they feel good about that. And as you heard in that interview, Arizona dealt with a lot of injuries this year. And it seems like they are back and healthy. I would say most teams are coming this thing fully healthy. The question is, what's the rust factor going to look like? All this layoff, what is it going to look? What is it going to look like come August 1st and 2nd?
Yeah, you know, I think really, if you look at the wear and tear of a normal season, we talked a lot about how Victor Arvidsson gets a fresh start here. He was not right, and now he gets to be healthy. All in all, though, I think at the time that the league paused, the Predators were relatively healthy compared to other teams. So I think they may have benefited by playing down the stretch. You never know what would have been around the corner, right? In that game against Toronto, somebody could have gotten hurt and changed everything. But I think the equalizer is more for the Coyotes getting healthy than the Predators, based on all the things that Craig said. When he listed four or five critical guys that were not at 100% or were not available at all and wouldn't have been down the stretch. So Arizona went from being on fumes and being on the verge of being out of the race entirely to getting a fresh start. And now, like you mentioned, maybe a chance to make a better impression on Taylor Hall and a renewed chance of keeping him around a little longer if they could have some success here. Because I think it's been an assumption for a while that he wasn't going to stay.
Dennis Dodd, by the way, just tweeted out a minute ago, Squid, Metropolitans, Pilots, Sockeyes. I thought it was going to be the Sockeyes. Salmon, Seaplanes.
The Seattle Salmon?
You had all these options, but you went with Kraken. So Dennis Dodd, who covers college football, not pleased with Seattle Kraken.
Well, not everybody was going to be, for sure.
A little surprised to hear that coming from Dennis Dodd. Is he from Seattle? Did I miss that?
He must be. I don't know.
He seems to be, you know, he seems to have a little extra interest in this.
We got a chance here. There it is. Beautiful pass. Matt Duchene to Mikhail Granlund.
Right now, that has been the best line in these scrimmages. That line has been the best
goals. They've got three goals.
Granlund, Turris, and Duchene centering that line. That has been the best line. You would think maybe the third line because of all the success they had in the regular season. You would think Joffe line back together, maybe go with that. No, it's been the second line of Duchene, Turris, and Granlund.
That was a high-skill play, big time. And so a goal against Pekka that, once again, another lesson as to why you can't judge who should play in goal based simply on who gave up the most goals in the scrimmages. Because that was a heck of a play. That was tough to defend, for sure.
I see Craig Smith not donning the gray jersey today.
Yeah, today they're not doing special teams. As much as yesterday, there was a big emphasis on special teams. Today, it's been all 5-on-5 in the first period.
Ryan Ellis had the gray jersey.
Right,
yesterday.
Because a guy was on one team in 5-on-5, but on the power play or penalty kill unit on the other team. So that's why they're.
But why were those two the only two in the gray jerseys?
Because they were switching teams when a team went on the power play.
Oh, I hinted when I was speaking with Justin Bradford when you were gone that maybe they had spilt breakfast or something on their jersey and they were not clean.
No.
I didn't know why.
That's not exactly what happened. Craig Smith and Ryan Ellis were
in great jerseys.
Like Craig Smith, for example, he's playing – what team is he on? He's on the white team, right? But he scored a goal for the gold team in the first period
In the gray jersey yesterday.
In the gray jersey because he was on the power play. It was a power play
It was goal. A power play goal, yeah. Yes. I didn't know that.
So he was on the power play unit for the gold team. See what I'm saying?
Okay. By the way, I've seen the setup now for Pete Weber and Hal Gill.
I have not. Somebody just let me know that was happening there. There's a picture, I guess?
Yeah. Yeah, there. Well, it's...
How does it look?
You've been included in the text...
Oh, it's a text. That's right. I'm looking at my Twitter.
It looks.
Is it here?
If I invite, yes. Yeah. Yes. It's downstairs in one of the rooms.
I think it'll look very similar to what our TV setup looks like. Those
tell me,
monitors look quite big.
Is it equivalent to your setup?
Oh, I haven't seen our setup.
Oh, you haven't seen
it? No, I know it's going to be a few rooms away, and so I would guess it would look very similar to this. That's pretty cool. Can we share this at some point, I guess?
Oh, I don't know.
Social media
I don't know.
Wise?
We'll have
to get the go-ahead.
We'll have
to
get somebody
light.
To sign the permission
yeah.
slip.
It looks spacious, and it looks like the monitors are quite big, which is going to be important. Pete and I were talking about that yesterday. Pete's actually sitting up here on press row with us, socially distanced, of course, but we agree that the monitor of the All 12 is going to be critical to all the announcers, right? Being able to.
So explain that to everybody out there listening that doesn't understand what you're talking
okay,
about.
Okay, so if you're a football person, you probably know about the All 22 shot.
You've heard that before, I'm sure.
Right, the overhead camera that shows everything that's happening on the ice at the same time. So it's way above. It's
or got on a, the field.
It's
on
got
the
a
field
pan.
Of, yeah.
It's got a pan the entire ice surface. So is, you know, let's say somebody gets caught behind the play, tangled with another player on the opposite side of the ice. On TV, you never see that because they're following the puck. But if two players on the other side are about to get in a fight or, you know, they won't – like how many times have you seen P.K. Subban get tangled with a guy and he wrestles with him, he does kind of an MMA move and won't let the guy up? You know, that if that happened in a regular broadcast – you wouldn't see that until the replay. But the announcer needs to know that that's going on. You would have no idea that's happening without the all 12 shot. So a shot of the entire ice the entire time is going to be critical for the announcers to be able to see so they can explain when the replay shows what happened. They'll be able to see what happened. So you have to be able to choose where you want to watch on the ice. You want to be able to pan the whole ice at all times. And the other critical thing is the focus to be able to see the numbers of the players as best as possible. And hopefully everybody will be able to adjust to that accordingly. We'll do the best we can.
I'm being told, Willie, that did you see the movie School of Rock? Yeah, of course you did. We talk about it all the time.
That movie, by the way, is rising up into my top 10. It's in my top 10.
It's on a lot.
It is on a lot. I just watched it the other day.
I know. And
I can't not watch it. I love it.
I'm being told that right now there is no intention of signing a permission slip right now. So I'm going to take that and use a School of Rock reference. I think it's time for you to go over to the jukebox and put on Stevie Nicks. That may be the best shot of us getting the permission slip signed. Because right now the principal is not willing to sign that permit. The field trip, she's not signing off on it. So you might want to go play Stevie Nicks in
and
the jukebox.
Order up a beer or two.
And order up a couple of beers. Actually, it was a big beer.
It was a big beer.
About a 36-ounce.
Play her favorite song off the jukebox, Stevie
she's
Nicks.
She's like, I love this song. He's like, so do I.
Yeah. So how about that field trip? Okay.
I'm going to hold you to that.
Great strategy.
So I'm just saying, as of right now, you haven't played Stevie Nicks on the jukebox. I'm being told that no green light. You cannot get your permission slip signed yet to put that out there.
Okay. Well, we'll have to wait until we get the permission.
So sorry for everybody who has been listening and wants to see the setup. But maybe it's because there could be some changes. I've heard that they're still building Pete's throne, and so it's not in the picture, and so they don't want it out there until his throne is completed.
You know what I did see, and I know Pete knows this, Charlie Steiner, the longtime announcer for the Dodgers on the radio.
I remember when Vander Holyfield was looking for him. Where's Charlie? Come on out here, Charlie.
Come on and get your beating. Didn't he say?
Get your whooping.
Get your whipping. Charlie, of famed ESPN lore, of course, he's now done the Dodgers games. He's a high health risk, right? His doctor told him, you should not go to the park. So they have created a studio like this for him in his house to do the Dodgers games. 71 years old, has health issues. So they have created this. He is literally doing it from like a lounge chair. In his basement, in his man cave. They've set up all the monitors for him to do it. So he doesn't even do the home games. Most of the baseball crews are doing it from on site at home and on monitors Like, I think the Cubs guys are doing it from Wrigley Field for home and road games. They're just, they'll do it from Wrigley Field even when the team's on the road.
Huh. All right, we'll come back.
Now I got a computer freeze, and so now even if I wanted to send out the picture,
see,
I can't even do it.
I've had that today, too. I don't know what's going
on.
We've got a lot of freezing going on. We'll come back. Jim Wyatt. We'll talk to him.
TennesseeTitans.com.
Yeah, he's kind of a big fan. We'll get his thoughts on Giants-Dodgers in the nightcap tonight. Kershaw will be on the mound. Johnny Cueto for the Giants. But we'll talk to Jim about the Titans and this upcoming season. We'll get into a lot of stuff with him to close out the third hour. Don't forget Elliot Friedman to start the fourth and final hour. Right now we're live at Bridgestone Arena. White versus gold. Gold team up 1-0 right now with about 4.5 to go in the first period. You're listening to Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Gold team still up 1-0 as the first period is winding down. Inter-squad scrimmage here at Bridgestone Arena. Predators getting ready before they leave for the Hub City on Sunday, which is in Edmonton. They'll have an exhibition game against Dallas on July 30th, so next Thursday, and then they will get their qualifying round and their series with the Coyotes started on Sunday, August 2nd. We bring in Jim Wyatt, who has been covering the Titans for a very long time. To see Titans.com on the line with us. Jim, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Hope you guys are doing well.
Well, you should be great because, you know, we're getting live sports going, and including your Dodgers tonight in the nightcap. Dodgers, Giants, Cueto, and Kershaw. Are you excited?
I am excited. No, these games, the Dodgers have been playing some of their squad games and their exhibition games on the Fox Sports West Channel, I think that's what it is, and got the baseball package here. So I've been watching those and seeing the crowd build of the cardboard cutouts. Got Mary Hart back behind home plate on Tuesday night for that game against the Angels. So it's not normal yet, but at least it's closer than it had been. And I am looking forward to the start of baseball season and looking forward to a lot of these other leagues getting cranked up.
How about Mookie Betts' contract yesterday? It's good to be Mookie, huh?
Sure is. I mean, obviously he grew up and played high school ball right off of Franklin Road in Overton, and to see a Nashville guy make good is a proud moment, especially as he's going to do it with the Dodgers. You know, the worst case scenario for me, after that trade was made, that he was going to end up with the Dodgers and never play a game there. And then, obviously, they worked on a plan to play a 60-game schedule in playoffs and thought, well, maybe I'd get a shortened season of Mookie. But to see now that he's got the 12-year, $365 million deal, probably going to retire a Dodger, I'm excited about that. And I think gives me even more reason to be fully invested in this team. I mean, because you got Mookie Betts, unfortunately David Price did not play this year, but Walker Buehler and Beatty from Belmont and a lot of Vanderbilt guys and Nashville guys in the system. It's a good time to be a Dodger fan.
We actually had Jorge Castillo on last hour, who covers the Dodgers for the LA Times, and he said the Dodgers were trying really hard. This is just to give a little backdrop of how much they've really wanted Mookie Betts. They were trying desperately to trade for him at the deadline last year. But the Red Sox, he said, started a kind of a winning streak and I guess decided not to part ways with him. But they were trying to get him at the deadline last year.
Yeah, he's a heck of a player and got so many good years ahead of him. He's going to be, just watching him in some of these exhibition games. I mean, I watched him obviously playing for the Red Sox and know what kind of player he is, but he's going to be a fan favorite once the fans are back in the stands. I'm looking forward to seeing him in Dodger Blue for many years to come.
Speaking of exhibition games, looks like there's not going to be a preseason. How do you think that's going to affect the start of the regular season?
Well, I think it's going to be – I say one hand it's going to be sloppier, and I think it will, just because, you know, even though these veterans and the starters weren't playing a lot of snaps, you know, in preseasons of the past, still allows you to work out some of the kinks and get a better, you know, familiarity and get on the same page heading into the season, you know, without having the benefit of any of those snaps against another team. I think it's going to cause for probably some less than perfect football at the start. But the thing is, it's everybody. I mean, it's everybody's going to be impacted by that. It's also going to hurt some of these young guys that trying to find their way onto NFL rosters and guys that don't make it in one place, you know, the chances of them being seen and, you know, signed by somebody else, you know, go down just because you're not able to see them perform. So that's unfortunate. I mean, it's one of the many changes that it's going to be the 2020 season. And I still keep my fingers crossed that everything is going to go off and the season will start on time. But, you know, there are a lot of challenges here as we at the start of players reporting, and just got to hope for the best that things can be off on time and there won't be a lot of outbreaks on teams.
Titans signed their third-round pick, Darrington Evans, yesterday. So they just have two unsigned, and that's their first and second-round picks, and Isaiah Wilson and Christian Fulton. What do you think Evans' role is going to be this year with the Titans? How much do you think they're going to use the rookie?
Well, I think the plan is to use him a pretty good amount. I mean, catching the ball out of the backfield to spell Derrick Henry some. I think a lot depends on what he's able to do and how comfortable he can get early. You know, he along with all these other rookies, you know, were hurt by the fact they couldn't have OTAs and mini camp and really kind of get your footing before camp starts. So he's going to be scrambling a little bit at the start. It's just a matter of how much he can catch up. You know, Derrick Henry is always going to make a case for himself to be on the field. We've heard so much talk about trying to spell him a little bit and reduce his workload and try to help him be stronger toward the end of the season. But none of that's come from Derrick Henry. I mean, he wants to play. But I think everybody realizes that you've got to keep him from taking such a pounding. And I think that's why Evans was drafted. I think he could be better than Deion Lewis, certainly than Deion Lewis of 2019. And I think he can provide some explosiveness for this offense. But, you know, he's going to be under the gun at the start just to try to be prove that he can be counted on at the start.
So some of the answers that would apply to the question I'm going to ask you if I would have asked you this time last year would have been obviously Ryan Tannehill because he wasn't the starter. Khalif Raymond would be another very good example. A guy we're not talking about now, but when the season goes along, at some point we're going to talk about them because they have a big play, whether it's the game-winning touchdown or what have you, or a big season. I mean, whatever it may be. How would you answer that? Who is a guy on this roster that nobody's talking about now, but we will be talking about in a good way at some point during the course of the season?
Well, you know, everybody knows Vic Beasley, but it just seems like that one has kind of been under the radar, A, because no one hasn't spoken to media yet, and B, because everybody seems to be fascinated with Clowney, that it's almost like people have forgotten that Beasley was even signed back in March. But I think Vic Beasley is going to be one of those guys whose name is going to be heard a lot in 2020. He's obviously somebody people know because, you know, he has been in the league for a while. He's been to some Pro Bowls, and he's not going to be a surprise by any stretch. But I think he's going to become a household name for Titans fans. I think I'm curious to see. You mentioned Evans. I think Evans could be one of those guys. I think Christian Fulton potentially could be, you know, a big playmaker for this team, the second round pick out of LSU, who's going to have a role this year. I'm curious to see how the whole secondary plays out. When I start looking at camp and positions to watch, I mean, I think what happens with him and what happens at that slot position especially is going to influence just how play time is distributed between a number of guys. So I think those are two. And then, you know, the good thing is on the offensive side of the ball, I mean, I think we could sit here and name 10 of the 11 starters, probably all 11, because I think Dennis Kelly's going to end up winning that job over Isaiah Wilson at the start. So the good news is you've got players that are returning on, you know, in the starting lineup. And on the defense, yes, you have to replace some guys, but it's not a roster that has, or at least a starting group that has a whole bunch of holes that need to be filled.
Talking to Jim Wyatt from the Titans website, does great coverage. Jim, there's a lot of stuff going on over there. I jogged by there the other day, and I saw the construction firsthand that's going on along the left side of the practice facility that people probably have a vision of at some point if they've ever been over there. But what are they going to use that space for that they're building on?
Yeah, that's the massive expansion project that they got started, I guess, at the end of last year. And it's going to allow the organization to house, you know, employees that are now currently at working in Nissan Stadium, that currently are working at the annex across the street. It's just going to bring everybody together under one big structure. And I think it's going to allow other coaches and other parts of the team to have a little bit more room to work with. It's come a long way. I'll say that, you know, I was by there over the weekend myself, and it looks completely different than it did, you know, the last time I was in the building, which was in March because of the pandemic. So I tweeted out a picture of it, and a lot of people were like, whoa, you know, that has changed significantly, and it has. It's probably still a year away, over a year away from being completed, but it's going to have a big entertainment space at the top that's going to allow people to come and watch training camp practices, obviously not this year, but in the future, and where you can host private events. You know, the studio inside is going to be moved to a different location. I think the media will have a different space to work in, and a lot of people's offices across the organization are going to be moved with that space. But it looks great, and I mean, it's going to look great. That, you know, you look at the final drawings of what it's supposed to look like. It's going to be a first class facility.
Jim, I don't know if they've thought this far ahead yet, but I'm curious. You know, they just had, of course, a new hire. The last time we had you on, you were talking about these guys, but one of them is in charge of the game day experience. We're watching right now as Major League Baseball, and you said it, you've been watching some of the spring games. They're working on how to do the sound when you don't have a stadium full of people. The Predators are running through things right now, piping in some sound and some different highlights and some music. I don't know how far the Titans have gotten with that, but presuming that there's not a full stadium in the very least, if any fans, do they have any idea of how they're going to go about it as a league or as a team?
Well, I think still a lot remains to be seen, because the hope is that there will be fans in the stands. And again, you know, it's going to be reduced capacity, and it's going to depend on what, you know, local officials say can be there. But I'm not expecting it to be any more than, you know, in that 12,000 to 15,000 to 20,000 range, and 20,000, I think, on the high end. So, you know, if you can get play, you know, if you can get some fans in social distance, you don't have to be as creative as some other things I've seen. If in the event that doesn't happen, then I know they've talked about different things. You know, watching the Dodgers, I know they've already sold 4,500 of those cardboard cutouts. I feel a little bit better seeing, you know, Mary Hart sitting behind home plate when I was watching the game the other night, even though it was a cardboard cutout of Mary Hart. But, you know, the organist is playing. They are pumping in the crowd noise. They're doing the walk-up songs for players. And when the Dodgers beat the Angels in an exhibition game, you know, the other night they played Randy Newman's I Love L.A. So, I mean, so they're trying to keep it as you know, close to what a normal game day might look like. Now, the NFL, again, I think across the league, most teams are still holding out hope that you're going to have players. But I saw the Fox tweet that today, they're going to put fans in the stands, I guess, from a technology standpoint, to make it look like it's a packed stadium. I actually like that better than looking at a bunch of empty seats. I mean, the Dodgers, when they first started these, you know, inter-squad scrimmages, they were doing it with nobody in the stands. And at least it looks a little bit better, even with the cardboard cutouts in there. I don't have a problem with them digitally putting fans in the stands on these Fox telecasts. I don't know what other leagues are looking at from that standpoint, but you know that they're going to try to be as creative as possible. And a lot of that's going to be a network deal. I mean, you know, what the networks do at, you know, during the course of the season, if the stadiums are empty, I guess will probably be across the board. But again, I'm hoping fans are there. I know that, you know, some cities have already said they're not going to have fans. At least the plan is to not have fans. And there's a scenario, I guess, where some stadiums will have limited capacity, others won't have anybody there. So it's going to be kind of a work in progress.
Jim, good stuff. Enjoy the game tonight, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for doing this.
Okay, you guys have a good one. Thank you.
You too. Jim Wyatt, TennesseeTitans.com is where you can find his work. Has been covering the team for a very, very long time here in this market. We will come back. We will start the fourth and final hour here from Bridgestone Arena, bringing Elliot Freeman from Sportsnet and 31 Thoughts. We do that on the other side, ESPN 102.5 The Game.